Hello, everybody, and welcome to a pre-Derby edition of American Citizens. My name is Gray, and I'm here with Josh. I'm back from my mini vacation. I was not on the last pod because I was unavailable, but we hope that you enjoyed it, listened to it. Very good stuff. But we have another guest this week. We are joined by James Carbonara. He has written for Read Man City. He has appeared on Blue Moon Rising TV. And just like us, he's a filthy American newcomer. So welcome to the show, James.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that warm welcome. And you're absolutely right. An American hearing some nice American accents, although we like the British accents as well.
We do.
It's strange. We like the British accents during sports, but when we're doing the podcast, you're like, it's nice to hear an American accent talking to me. But at the same time, it's got nothing to do with prejudice against the British. It's just if you follow this sport so much, chances are 95% of your podcast consists of foreigners talking about your favorite team. Not that that's bad. It's just nice to have variety.
Exactly. You want to, and we want to hear these types of things on ESPN by our local sports people, which is why I really appreciate that you guys are creating that unmet need in the blogosphere and the podcast sphere. I remember, Aguero, I think he had hit a hat trick against Bayern. Maybe Messi had a hat trick the same day. Messi gets all the headlines. There's just such a there's not enough football, and we call it football talk here in the U.S. with American accents. So glad you guys are filling that need.
To be honest, can I, and Gray, I really am trying to toss this question to you. I don't think either of us expected how much of a need we were filling.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean, I don't know what we expected, but it wasn't this. But yeah, we didn't really know. I mean, there are American City fans. We knew that, but their presence in the actual conversation is much more limited, and that's understandable. But that seems to be a changing. So, let's kick right off. We are recording this as we sit on Tuesday, September 6th, which is 1, 2, 3, 4 days away from the Manchester Derby, the first Manchester Derby of the season.
Which in Dmitry Seluk time is 50 million, hours that he could spend just causing problems. Like, that's a lifetime for Dmitry Seluk.
Now that you've brought this up, I have to ask, because we will get to this later, but what do we think Dmitry Seluk is doing right now in his den of evil with his dartboard that probably has a picture of Pep Guardiola on
stroking
it?
A cat of some kind, very creepily.
He's like the evil villain in Batman.
Yeah. What about you, James? What you got?
In terms of that, I mean, these are the issues that these players have. Dmitry Seluk, even Balotelli and his agent and the things that he has to say, although I guess he's sticking up for him a little bit more. I think these guys cause harm to the players. I think, maybe that's part of the reason, Guardiola wants to move Yaya on. People don't want these headaches. And, frankly, Balotelli was a headache. I think these agents should just, make good money deals and stay out of the press.
I kind of want to make a countdown clock until Yaya Toure's contract expires and we are done with Dmitry Seluk once and for all in our lives.
It'd really be more of a Dmitry Seluk count.
It would. Often. I mean, super. I think Torre's time has come and gone.
True, but I have more affection for him than much I do more. Dmitry.
I will be much more excited about Dmitry Seluk no longer being associated with Manchester City in any way, shape, or form than I will Dmitry Toure.
Dmitry Seluk didn't score the penalty, the final PK that beat Liverpool for a trophy. So,
Dmitry Seluk didn't score at Newcastle or at Wembley.
No, he sure didn't. So I will definitely miss Yaya, but these agent bust ups. But remember, we've still got 80 Ward down the line. And True. Right now the heme is happy.
True.
So let's move on to
business. Let's get to the derby, yeah.
Let's get to business.
I think the pertinent question that we have to figure out before we really get into the nitty-gritty of the game is the fact that Manchester City will be without Sergio Aguero because of the ban. And my thoughts on this, I know this has been, it's been a while now, and it was covered when you spoke to David Mooney. Nah, briefly. Or was it? I don't remember. My brain is fried.
Actually, there were two podcasts with David Mooney, and it happened again, and only one of them was usable. So I'm glad.
So David Mooney is cursed.
Yes, that's three times. But the fourth,
very, very good to know. But yeah, we did get the one, thank God. But the question is, and my thought on the Aguero ban is, I don't know how Mariner didn't see it, and I think we will at some point get into the Mark Halsey thing and all that, and whether these bans need to be relooked. But my thinking is, it's hard for me to rack up the sympathy for him, given how it looked. But neither here nor there. City have a game to play, and they have to play it without him. And it's a very important game. So I guess the first question I would pose here is, how do you, if you are Pep Guardiola, or if you're pretending to be Pep Guardiola in our case, what do you do? Like, I feel like there's a lot of different things you can do. Do you go with Nolito? Do you go with the false nine? Do you go with Kelechi Iheanacho? What do you do? Turn this over to whoever wants to answer.
Guess first.
All right, guess first. Oh, it's tough. I mean, my impulse is to say not Kelechi. That Kelechi is more of an impact sub. He has a great goals to minute ratio, but I believe he had started one game of prominence, and I don't think he scored. I think it was a 0-0 or 1-0 game. That said, he's coming off a great strike, for Nigeria. And additionally, the benefit of sticking with Kelechi is that you get to keep Raheem and Nolito, in position, and they've both been doing, quite well there. But I still wonder if the spotlight is too big for him.
But may I suggest also that then you run into a different problems, because there are rumblings, big rumblings, in fact, fierce rumblings, that Gundogan's already been confirmed as fit for the derby. But there are rumblings that Kompany could be back, but perhaps more importantly, that Sané will be going. Do you keep Sané on the bench and ease him into it, or how do you do that? Like these are the other problems that Gray and I have tried to figure out how to work this. So now we're going to pass our problem on.
Yeah, Josh has had a lot of thoughts on the possible tactical setup on Sunday, so let's go for it.
Yeah, let's hear yours. Assuming everybody, let's just pretend everybody but Kompany comes back. What do you do?
Me or Gray? What do I do?
Yeah. You.
Guest first, we're pinning this off on you.
Mm-hmm. Guest first. So here's the thing. I thought, we could put Navas in there and, push Nolito up front. But then, is Navas a holdover from the Pellegrini age? Is he really our best player? Part of me thinks, let's put our most talented players on the field, in the realm of a Sané, in the realm of a Gundogan. But then again, Kolarov, we've seen a resurgence from him since being under Guardiola, so maybe a novice wouldn't be so bad. Do you ease both Sané and Gundogan into the side? I mean, again, my gut is really just to move Nolito up top, and then either perhaps add Navas on. I mean, I even considered putting Fernando in there, who came on for Aguero, and just playing a little more defensive, and push De Bruyne up top. There are a myriad of things you could do, but hard pressed, I would just put Nolito up top, and then maybe make some subs at halftime if that's not working out so well, and maybe bring him back down and sub Navas off, and put somebody on, put Raheem on another side. I mean, there's so many different things that could be done for this game.
See, here's where I check in with this. Everybody looks at a Jose Mourinho side, and if I asked just the both of you, and either one of you can answer, a Jose Mourinho side scores on you by doing what?
Counter.
Okay. So that's pretty much a known commodity with Chelsea. So I'm looking at this situation and thinking about where a lot of these counters occur and what's going on with the transition. And usually what ends up happening is you get a ball turned over in midfield is either the worst. Well, the worst is an errant backwards pass from a center back. That you get a ball's lost in midfield and the counter starts. Or I see this with City quite a bit. They commit numbers forward. Everybody's down there. A ball takes one odd bounce and lands in a spot where whomever it is that doesn't play for City has acres of space in front of them and is able to kick off the counter. And for some weird reason, it always falls to the guy who has tons of pace and can kick off the counter. But what I would do, honestly, is I think that this is the game where I'd put in a double pivot. And I think the idea of having Fernandinho and Gundogan playing in the midfield, you sacrifice either Silva or De Bruyne for this game. And to be honest, I would sacrifice De Bruyne at this point. He's just simply not really played well. So I would use Silva in that role, and I want to say start. I like your idea of Nolito. I'm kind of with you on the idea of Nolito as a false nine, just simply because he's used to that. He's played through the middle with Spain. Like that, he knows how to do it to Guardiola's specifications, which is probably the most important thing about playing a false nine. I think, and even to your point, you mentioned that Kelechi, the couple games he started, I would add that he's not really impacted a lot of games that he started, and nobody's really talking about it because we know he's young, but most of the Iheanacho damage for Manchester City has happened when Kelechi has come off the bench, late in games when minds and legs are tired. But to me, he hasn't quite yet, as a striker, found his inner Marcus Rashford. If that makes sense. Marcus Rashford he just seems to have the balls to, get going, get forward, find himself in the right places. And I think Iheanacho is there, but just not necessarily in the Guardiola system. I think he's still undoing some of the bad habits Pellegrini taught him. So, I don't know.
What if we kind of compromise on this?
Okay, because, I'm interested.
You can play a double pivot, but you don't necessarily, now that you don't have Aguero in the picture, who is an automatic starter if he's available, now that you don't, do you necessarily have to sacrifice a Silva or De Bruyne? You can just sort of swap Nolito up front as a false nine and then move one of the other two forward.
Yeah, but then I was also including Sané. If he's healthy, ready to go.
Well, I don't know that I would start him, even if he is.
You don't think?
Keep him on the bench.
Okay, fair enough. I was thinking, at the end of the day, City spent a pretty penny on Sané.
At the end of the day, this is kind of silly because Guardiola probably has something in mind that we haven't even considered.
Yeah, we're going to get to match day and Kolarov's
going to be playing wide up front.
And you should be like, oh, all right. And it's going to turn out that Kolarov is a world-class striker.
He's going to score once and get two assists and be named man of the match.
He'll score a hat trick on his debut. What are you talking about?
He's going to rip their back four apart.
I just think that the double pivot, and I'll concede with you, Gray, I think maybe bringing Sané off the bench, see where he's at, not place all that pressure on him. Right now, Nolito and Aguero is working. But, James, to your question about why Navas, because he's so tactical and he covers up other people's mistakes. And that is something that doesn't really – people do not talk about that enough with Navas. All anybody ever does is rip on his crossing. You just never see people talk about how excellent he is at sliding into vacated spaces that aren't even in his territory. He's just so smart. He sees what's about to go wrong, and then he puts himself in a position to mitigate the damage. And I feel like that's why Pellegrini actually kept him, is because tactically, Navas gets it. And so, I don't know what you do there, but I'll tell you this, it's a great problem to have, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And to your point about Navas, you know, intelligence and work rate and tracking back on defense. And I mean, Navas is the type of player that Pep wants, you know, seemingly wants all his players to be, you know, just running hard all game long. And, you know, there was some stat that was floating around that we ran 10 kilometers, you know, more against, you know, Stoke City away than we did last year, you know, this time under Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, I saw that same tweet.
Yeah. And he
the least surprising stat of all time.
And you know, his remark in the press conference was, you know, he wants his players, you know, to run for each other and to know, I'm going to run now.
That press conference too? Like, if people aren't going to be running, some people may find themselves on the bench. Wasn't that same press conference?
I think it was, and quite a difference from last year's mentality.
Yeah. What about you, Gray? Where? How do you set your lineup up? Lineup, knowing now for a fact that Gundogan is in.
He plays, no doubt in my mind. I'm putting him in there. Just to dispute myself, because, you know, I like arguing with myself. I'm half German, half British, so, you know, occasionally I have to go to war with myself. Sané, you know, while you don't, you know, you think maybe an injection of pace off the bench if you need it, at the same time, he has been training for the last couple weeks, and he has also been not on international duty like everyone else.
Didn't they actually run through a couple of games with like not like full blown games?
I don't know.
Somewhere.
The counterpoint to my own point was basically, you know, gee, they've had him sitting here for two weeks preparing for this game. Maybe they will throw him in there. Maybe he is one of the most prepared 11 to play this game. I would expect that Bravo is obviously going to start and get his debut. Did I see something about Nicolas Otamendi not getting back to Manchester until late Thursday? They could have he might not be available to start, which could open things up for Kolarov or company if he's fit.
Who would you start if company is fit? I'm seriously asking this question. Which of the two would you start at center back in the derby?
I would start Company and Stones. I'm presuming when we say Company is fit, we say he has been checked, double checked, triple checked.
It doesn't matter.
They're completely, you know.
They've done that all before, but
I know. But you know, if they say he is as fit as he can be, not like, you know, blah blah blah.
James, what about you?
I'd go with Kolarov and Stones. Just I wouldn't want his first game back being the Man United game. Although I do take your point, Gray.
No, it's totally fair.
I'm
not certain there's a wrong answer here.
Yeah, I take Gray's point as well, and it definitely carries some significant weight with me. But I also am in line with James. I think that Kolarov has shown him, especially because he's shown himself to be a very competent, very, very competent center back. And he's got that left-footed thing going. So there are a variety of different ways. And just flipping back to Nolito and or Sané for a second, you know what's interesting about that is that both Nolito and Sané can play on that left side right there. And in theory, Raheem Sterling can play on that left side. So Pep Guardiola could have a plan whereby Sané, Sterling, and Raheem are basically just interchanging the whole game.
They have so many options. It's such a fantastic luxury to have.
That's what I'm thinking they're going to do.
If they have everyone fit, they have so many ways that they could go with it.
I think they're going to end up going with Sané and then Nolito in that false nine spot, Sterling on the right, and then let both of those guys track in and sometimes play center forward, because both Sané and Sterling have been used as, you know, in that through the middle before. I think obviously probably Sané to better effect, but, you know, whatever. It's neither here nor I think it'll be interesting. So, but who does Gundogan replace for you? Because somebody has to come out.
Well, you know, I'm just sort of operating under the assumption that's probably inaccurate, that they are not going to reinvent the wheel for this. And they might. They might do something completely out of the ordinary. But frankly, I just think that Gundogan sort of slots in, and Nolito is a false nine, and without Aguero, they don't have to make a replacement, and they do sort of a double pivot thing, tweak the formation, and just drop Gundogan in instead of Aguero and leave the other 10 the same.
Fair enough.
Could be entirely wrong about that, and I probably will be, because frankly, the upside of the international break, you know, and there are downsides. We know that Guardiola hates them. And there's a reason that I would have rather had this game not be the first one back after a break. But the upside is that, you know, for a fact that for the last 2 weeks, Guardiola has been dissecting this game for all it's worth. So there is no doubt in my mind that there is going to be a very comprehensive plan targeted.
And that's why I don't think it's coincidence that these reports about Gundogan and Sané being healthy and ready. Like, I don't think that this is, like, these things seem like stuff that are coming from inside the club, you know,
giving
Jose something else to think about.
Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that they already have a plan, and that plan is already being put into, you know,
it's already being used by leaking that stuff and letting Jose go, oh, crap. All right. So they don't
think they know exactly what they intend to do on Saturday. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt in my mind. So let's talk about the Aguero ban before we go further. And particularly because the controversy lately has been, I mean, the first question that everyone asked was, how the heck did Andre Mariner not see it? He was standing right in front of it. And then you have Mark Halsey, a former Premier League referee, coming out and saying, well, I was told to lie and say that I didn't see things that I, you know, that I didn't punish so that they could be retroactively punished. Because as we all know, had he said he saw it and didn't take any action, then it could not have been retroactively punished. Is it necessary to, I don't know. Do we need to take another look?
No, I tweeted a picture about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, do we need to take another look at the rules? Do we need to take another look at, you know, what Mark Halsey is saying or blah, blah, blah? Whole scenario. Go ahead.
I think all of them, right?
Right.
All I was going to say is I think you got to look at all of it.
Right. Yeah. So, James, if you have any thoughts, I know you mentioned you probably do, so go for it.
Yeah, I don't think it should matter whether or not the rule as it stands, if the referee saw it and didn't call anything, then, you know, it's not reviewable. He can't get any kind of ban. So did he see it? Did he not see it? Is he being pressured? I think you do need to review that rule and maybe just throw the rule out and let an independent board review the actions that happened on the field, whether or not the referee made the correct game time decision, because you see, you know, folks in the media saying, oh, you know, look at what Aguero did with his arm. He should get the 3-match ban, irrespective of whether he saw it. I have a different opinion because I do think that defender stirs things up. He didn't get hit. He seemed to, you know, drop like a phantom. I've seen him do it against Schweinsteiger, where he barely gets touched and he drops to the ground. I think defenders get away with way too much. You could argue that that Aguero, you know, gets away with you know, too much, you know, jumping and stamping on David Luiz, you know, one time. Although, he's not a diver. He's not somebody who falls to the ground or I don't think is dirty without, you know, being hit first. So I think there's a lot to look at. I think importantly, they just need to change that rule about the referee having to see it. Just let a board review it and, you know, make a ruling.
Yeah, that's how it pretty much works in America. You know, I mean, like the leagues can step in and say, okay. But you know what, though? I think that more – look, in my opinion, the FA needs to be out of the Premier League. It just does. It needs to be – they need to be out of the Premier League. The FA's job is – I mean, they've got hundreds of different jobs, but this just doesn't seem like something that should fall within FA jurisdiction. I feel like – and maybe this is the American in me speaking, this is why we have commissioners in sports.
Yeah. So that Roger Goodell can...
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, though...
So that Roger Goodell can act as judge, jury, and executioner in every case that comes his way.
Yeah, but and Gary Bettman as well. But sort of at the end of the day, you do get a bit more transparency with a commissioner from... Like, if you're fortunate enough to get a guy like Adam Silver or what...
I was going to say, I think it depends on the commissioner.
It does. It does.
Because I would argue that the NFL is not terribly transparent in what it does.
No, but that's what I'm saying. At worst case scenario, nothing changes. But as long as you have a rotation, because the FA is always going to be the good old boys club. We've learned that. We've found that out through the takedown of FIFA. And they're always going to replace somebody who holds the same values that they do. Always. It's just the way those clubs work. So if you take that out of their hands and put it into a commissioner of the Premier League's hands, you know, just put a term limit on it. Like, that's the only problem with American sports, is that commissioners are just commissioners for life until they decide they're done. I don't think that that ought to be the case. I think, much like any other position of power, anytime you have that much power, I do think there should be a system of checks and balances.
If I can take this a step down and ape the NHL, who have their own appointed head of discipline, who basically reviews everything, you know, and sort of has the leeway to enforce the rules as seen fit. I don't think it's a perfect system, but
I like that.
Someone who is literally specialized, that their only job is to make sure that players are being disciplined or not disciplined properly. And, you know, just even if retroactively or not, you know.
I also don't like the idea of giving the 3-game active retroactive like review and things like that. Like,
well, I don't like the fact that the suspension is like predetermined for every offense like that.
Yeah,
I think they should take each case as they see fit. Is basically what I think.
And that's what I was tweeting about on Twitter when I said context is important, and people were like, "No, it was violent conduct." And it's just like it's sort of a pointless argument to have, but at the same time, it's not. Like, you do need to take into account each individual situation. Aguero may not be innocent, but he's also not the world's greatest offender. And in an incident like this, okay, violent conduct for sure, but let's take the man into account. It seems weird to me that, you know, basically Diego Costa can do something much, much worse than Aguero, and they both get the same ban. Whereas Diego Costa was doing it with malicious intent, Sergio probably just lost his cool there for a second, you know?
And it happens. And the other thing I would say, this nonsense, like Aguero is a repeat offender, like Duncan Castle's pushing the Mourinho company line. The only other incident Aguero has had since he got to England was that little flap with David Luiz in the FA Cup semifinal 3 years ago, which, as I recall, he did not get punished for. Two incidents in 6 years. I mean, are you kidding me? There's, you know, 5 years actually, but you know, it's kind of nonsense. This is clearly not a dirty player who plays close to the edge or whatever.
That was my point on Twitter. It just seems like these predetermined systems of like, oh, okay, we've retroactively decided it was violent conduct. Here's your 3-game ban. Okay, but why 3? And nobody has a good answer. Well, that's the standard. Why?
This gets into conspiracy theories, but is there a motive to ding up, you know, City a little bit, maybe, you know, who's having some success, you know, big transfer window, Pep Guardiola, everything.
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced. And you know what, you can call conspiracy theory. Things are only conspiracy theories if you don't have a healthy body of evidence to support it. At the end of the day, you have people on BT Sports saying, I hope they lose. You have clubs taking shots at City, like the team that finished fourth place in the Champions League. Thanks, Dortmund. Like, how about if we bring up your couple of seasons ago when y'all finished in the Europa League? There is a very clear agenda, and let's be honest, there is an extensive amount of racism that's wrapped up in this. Every time, like, I cringe every time I read the words oil money or Arab money. Money is fucking money. And I am speaking to everyone. Money is money. Saying it's Arab money implies that it has a different value. It does not. It might within the international currency systems, but as for giving a some price of something, money is money. And it doesn't matter who owns a damn team. You know, oil owners, I mean, Jerry Jones owns the Cowboys, you know, oil. Nobody ever brings up that oil money with Jerry Jones, you know, and granted they have a salary cap and can't spend like the Premier League, but there are people who are in the oil business that own baseball teams and they still don't do that crap. It pisses me off. I do think it's racist. I do think it's an awful trend. And I think a lot of it is used to slide against City. And when you see it coming from so many different angles, I absolutely do believe that there are 1, 2, maybe 3. I don't know how many were on the FA panel that decided this. I don't know how many the panel comprised of. But it wouldn't shock me if there were 1, 2, 3, 4, even like 5 people in there who hold on to some notion that City aren't, and I've heard this term a lot too, a proper club. I don't even know what the hell that means.
Can I make a congressional motion or something?
Please.
That we like when we start, whenever Man United break the transfer record, can we start referring to it as like freight rail money or like fish supply money or like they have oil money? How do you think Malcolm Blazer made his fortune? Come on.
Yeah.
Fish money, marine protein money.
Right. It's in. And it's the same thing. If somebody brought it up.
Harley Davidson money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If somebody said that, somebody would be like, and who cares? Exactly my point. Why does it matter?
Tampa Bay Buccaneer money.
Why does it matter that a Middle Eastern man decided he wanted to buy a soccer team? Look at how much money he has dumped into this of his own accord. And look at how much talent City are getting at such a young age that they could go on, many of them, to play for England. And it's stupid that the powers that be are crapping on City's investment. Like, A, it's a bad thing for football, and B, it's a bad thing for England. It's not. It's stupid. And those people are stupid. And if you say that, you're one of those stupid people, but I don't think anybody listening is
saying that. This is I think we're shouting into the wind right now, but it feels good.
It does.
The only thing I would say is that I bet that City have contributed greatly to the fact that the Premier League got that big TV deal and made your club richer. So you're welcome.
And the China deal too. When the Premier League is hauling in money fist over anus because City went and struck a deal like that with the Chinese consortium, I'm sure we'll still be hearing comments about, you know, City and that China money. Like, wait, what? I don't know.
I'm sure we're all in agreement, though, that we need to look at the rules.
We do.
Yeah, think we got fun here. So let's get back to the game. How are we feeling right now? It's a broad question, but how are we feeling about this, with this doom impending on us?
James?
Well, myself personally, we've beaten up on teams that are, you know, towards the bottom of the table. I know we're only three games in. If we look at last year, I think they finished maybe a bit more towards the middle. I mean, you look at this great soccer or football that we're playing right now, but really, who have we played it against? I think we need a win against United, against teams at the top of the table to have more confidence. So I'm excited about the way we're playing, but I need to see that against a top of the table team.
Additionally, you don't think Stella were a top team? I mean,
that was the Champions League, man.
They won their league or something.
No, running circles around the JV. I mean, that's just a warm up. And the other thing too is we have our players coming back from international break. Who, you know, maybe they're picking up bad habits, playing in odd positions. I have to say, the City tweeted out 5 hours or so ago a practice video, and I've been a big fan of their practice videos because they look so much different under Guardiola compared to Pellegrini. I mean, it's tactics, it's running hard. There are all these new objects on the field. But I saw a lot of smiles and laughter, and maybe that's because the international break, the whole team isn't there. But we're off to a great start. We're playing very exciting football, but we have to, beat a top team coming out of the international break. And so I'm nervous. I would gladly take a point. I'll take a nil or a 1-1 draw.
And that was the criticism last year, is that they were flat track bullies. Their record against the top eight was horrible. So there's something to prove here because, title contenders generally are, you have to be the best, you have to beat the best, to use that old adage. So you look and you think, this is the first chance. Obviously it is a rival as well. There's a lot of other stuff surrounding the game, the managers, the rivalry, but put all that aside, this is the big test. This is a measuring point. And, United are in the same boat. They have a lot of new players. They have obviously a very highly rated new manager, but they haven't really played anyone yet. So this is it. This is kind of going to be a very early measuring stick, I think, for both. I feel okay about it. I never feel good about derbies. It's a nightmare. I don't. A lot of people I know, they talk about it like, oh, I just cannot wait till it's over, and I just hope that we win, but I can't wait till it's over. And I understand exactly that feeling because, and it's not even that bad for me. People who live there have to deal with coworkers and friends and people they see on transportation every day. It's just, there is a sense of dread. And I think it, particularly this one, I would argue is, the derby's kind of, not that it ever went away, but the last couple of years, either United have been off the pace, or last year everyone was off the pace, or in 2012-13 City were off the pace when they finally played them, and particularly in the second one, they were way, way behind. Not that it's ever not meaningful, not that it's ever not huge, but I think we're back to having huge ramifications for the top of the table for the entire league for the first time in probably 4 years. So that's, it's exciting, but it also makes my stomach do a bunch of flips. Josh, what do you think about the game?
I think United sure as heck believe in themselves. And I know the media love them. And it's odd to me that City are underdogs in this game. I find that absolutely hilarious because of the two squads, City have looked much better defensively and going forward. They also create more chances. And even if there have been periods of their games where they've, you know, had to struggle, under Pellegrini, those periods usually resulted in City either completely giving up the lead or City losing the lead and then going behind. And now, under Guardiola, City have been able to weather those storms. Teams haven't really got off really amazing chances against City. And I think that with Claudio Bravo, who will be starting, I think that opens up so much more that we haven't even seen from City yet. You know, Claudio Bravo is just so good at that distribution. And it's going to be impressive to me to finally see a world-class goalkeeper in net for City, along with a guy, you know, who at the same time can get that ball out quick and let City get moving on a much slower, much younger, and a lot less acclimatized to their system, Manchester City, or Manchester United, rather. So, in terms of how I feel about it, I'm going to have to go with sort of ambivalent because I don't know what I'm going to think until I see a lineup, you know, like I could feel really good, but then I go and I see a lineup. Pep has been anybody want to mention the time that Pep decided to play three against Barcelona at the back? I mean, the guy is not infallible. So I am curious to see how he's going to handle the headache of having, especially if Kompany comes available along with Gundogan and Sané. There may be some temptation on Pep's behalf to make a move. Whereas, like Joe said early, keeping the continuity may have been the way to go. So I'm sort of ambivalent about the game at this time, but that's not because I'm not completely excited for it. I'm curious to see what's going to line up, who for sure is going to be available, and then where this thing is going to go. But I don't feel that same dread that you normally feel during United week. Like, I know Mourinho wants his bite at Pep, but I think in terms of systems and players, Pep got more of what he wanted than Mourinho got of what he wanted. Like, he may have brought in the players he wanted, but he didn't bring in the players United needed.
Yeah. I think of the fact that so much more is going to be made of this than it probably is necessary, no matter what the result is. But I'm just, you know, I always get nervous for these things. There's not much I can do about it.
I get nervous on game day.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's too early in the season to make a ruling. I mean, was it last year that we beat up on Chelsea pretty good early in the season, and then, you know, ended up doing nothing? We got off to a great start. I think we could win this game. We could lose this game. It may not be indicative of how the season will go. It's just you look back at last year and how poorly we performed against, you know, the Man Uniteds, the Liverpools, the Arsenals, the Leicester at the top of the table. It would be, you know, psychologically nice for the fan base to get a victory.
As far as confidence in Manchester City go, I think that there is you know, fans have every reason to believe in what Guardiola's doing. I think that when you look at the product on the field, it speaks for itself. I think when you look at the number of trophies Guardiola has in his closet, it speaks for itself. Where are you at with your confidence, James?
Yeah, in the versus United or for the season, for the future?
In the derby.
In the derby. I'm really just so-so for again for a number of reasons, because we're coming off the international break, because you know Jose in his beginning years is usually good, even though he has some injuries. Obviously, we lose our talisman Aguero up front, so we have to mess with the lineup a little bit, and we may be bringing some new faces in. I feel like it's an easier read when we're coming off a Premier League week. You kind of know what the momentum and the trend is. If we look at American sports, it's like an American football team playing after the bye week. So, I'm a little fidgety to get this game going and see how the first 20 minutes go. I'm a little, I'm not super, confident. And at the same time, don't have a reason to think we're not a quality squad. I just think it could be a little rusty with some tweaking and losing a key man up front.
See, I'm less worried about the key man up front, to be perfectly honest with you, because here's what is going to be beneficial to City. When City are in possession of the ball, they're going to be playing 10 on 11.
Right.
Well, actually, they're going to be playing 10 on 9. Excuse me, because Ibra doesn't track back and goalkeeper can't come out. So City are going to have all 10 men likely committed forward. And Ibra is just going to be sitting there doing basically nothing, because that's what he does. You know, get me the ball. The ball should come to me. I am a Ferrari. Or I'm sorry, what did he call himself? A Lamborghini, and said Pep that was using... When you have a Ferrari in your garage, you drive it or something. I don't know what that comment was. But I do think that that's going to be a weakness for United. Whereas City play as a unit. I also think that Paul Pogba has really not been as advertised in the Premier League. He's had, a game or a half where he's really kicked on and shown what he's capable of, but the consistency is not there yet with Pogba, and which is kind of sad, because that's, and I say this with all sincerity, as a guy who likes Pogba, you should be able to get consistency for what they paid for him. If you're paying that much for a player, he'd better be like, and I'm not talking about every player has an off day. This is a guy who doesn't look settled in yet. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, you're talking about the money. I mean, what did we pay for, KDB, Kevin De Bruyne? And he's been, terrific at City. Not somebody who's a doubt. I mean, sure, there are rusty games here and there, but nothing like the inconsistency of Pogba, which is, maybe double or
you take John Stones. Look at how quickly John Stones slotted in at City this year under a new manager, coming over from, Everton. New team, new club, new city, new life, new manager. And the guy's playing better than he ever has in his life. Pogba wasn't even necessarily going to go to Manchester United. He actually was really wanting to go to Real Madrid. And Raiola thought that he could get Madrid to come up on, one of their normal Galactico-style bids to up Manchester United. And everybody else who looked at what Raiola was asking for Paul Pogba said, "You're off your rocker. We're out. See ya." And in the end, United didn't win the signature of Pogba. They were the last ones left standing. Like, everybody else was smart enough to get out. $25 million agent fee? Get the... Ooh, man. No.
Yeah, you think about Sterling, and you know, he's certainly come good, and he was young, but you think about what his fee was, and you know, maybe he had a little bit trouble with precision in his first year, and then you look at Pogba's fee. Yeah, I mean, you should be paying for a finished product, and there's a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah, and so I think that's why maybe I'm a bit more confident than some with this City game, is because I look at this and I see some glaring holes on United that they didn't fix. And I don't know what they're going to do with them. I don't know how they're going to address them. I do know Mourinho has a plan, but here's the problem. In order to do some crazy things, you have to have a decent roster. Mourinho doesn't have that at his disposal. He's got a lot of aging players, a lot of capable players, some really young raw talents, and some guy in Pogba that's stuck halfway between a Ballon d'Or candidate and maybe just a Yaya Toure type, you know, good midfielder, but nothing, you know, that breaks the bank. I do not think that Jose has confidence in everything he's doing with Manchester United. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out, but I think fortune favors the bold. And City so far have been bold. They've gone out, they've made their moves, they've splashed their cash, they've set their line in the sand, especially Pep Guardiola with how he wants to play, what he wants to do, so on and so forth. United still seem to be fidgeting around, and in 2 weeks or not, it's people also aren't mentioning the fact, and maybe you happen to know off the top of your head, but a lot of people for City got an excuse for an international break too.
Yeah, that point is well taken. I think what you're maybe seeing perhaps in social media among the fans and a reticence to have confidence. And clearly this year is different with different players, new players, fresh players. But last year you look back to like a Liverpool game where man for man, perhaps we were the better team. We had more talent. We should have, you know, gone out there and won those games, and then we just got smacked around by a team that played together. Clearly, you know, Manchester United does not seem like that, but I think we have this hangover where we have the better players and we don't put it together, which we...
That was under Pellegrini, but, though.
Exactly. You wouldn't expect that under Pep Guardiola, but I think those nerves are tough to shake off until we have a couple of performances.
That's fair. I just think that City are composed right now. I think that when you see them getting better and better each game, these sort of touches and flicks, I mean, this is Guardiola football. This is what it's all about. These subtle one, just beautiful, beautiful. That's why he wants people who are capable of, dribbling, are capable of handling a first touch, who can also pass, is because he does. The way his system ends up being played, you could end up theoretically anywhere on the field, and when you're there, you better know what to do, and if not, at least know enough of how not to leave a glaring weakness while you work your way back to where you're supposed to be, because a lot of the mistakes that players make, and this is something that the average fan, you know, that they don't often sit back and notice these patterns, but a lot of the mistakes that many players make isn't so much like right at the time. It's preceded by a mistake that pulled them out of position to where they had to try and then work their way back into position. Like, we look at clumsy challenges and such, you know, you got to go back a couple ways and look, well, why did he have to make that clumsy challenge? Oh, because he came all the way out here for that ball back there and then had to race back into position. If he wouldn't have done that, he wouldn't have had that clumsy challenge resulting in a free kick or a penalty kick. And I just think that, like, right now, United aren't, I don't know, I feel like... I just feel like things are flowing a bit more smoothly with City, and City play the type of ball that I don't think is necessarily going to under Pellegrini. They needed a lot of things to go their way on Clattenburg because City weren't making it happen. Under Pellegrini, City can deal with some crappy refereeing decisions here and there because they can make it happen. They can press the issue. When they need to find that extra gear, Guardiola brings it out of them, and the score ends up being, 4-5, 6-1, or whatever the case may be. So, and I only think that City are going to get better. I don't think that this is a case where City are going to have extraordinary ups and downs. I think they're going to get better.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, especially based on Pep's history and how quickly it's started to gel, and we've started to see that beautiful football.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but before we get out of here, just a couple of final thoughts. Which of the undebuted signings are you most excited to see?
Sané and Gundogan, come to mind. I actually, probably the most, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Maybe it's, Gabriel, Jesus, or Jesus, or how we say it from Brazil. Because I think I read something today where they're talking about him being a next Neymar and certainly heir to the throne of Aguero. So I think of everybody, I think it would be him, because there was a period of time where we had spoils, for strikers, four strikers, and then maybe some weren't playing well, and then we were down to three. And, when we think about our man up front, it's him. It's Aguero. Kelechi, he's coming along, but he's, again, impact sub. So I think Gabriel is the one I'm most excited to see. Of course, I don't think that's till December or January. He's got to finish his season. So, for me, it would be him.
And there was a lot of talk about him, about whether or not he's going to be like the next great Brazilian striker front man. And I got to tell you, what you see out of this kid, it's hard for me to to picture this kid not coming in and staying with City. I've heard a lot of people talk about, like, he comes in and he may go out on loan, or I've even read that he may stay with Palmeiras through the Copa Libertadores. I gotta be honest, man. City will ultimately have the final say on that. Like, they've agreed to let him stay through December. The Copa isn't until June. I'm not thinking. I believe that's when it. I know it's a ways away, but I don't think City are going to be keen to let Palmeiras hang on to him, just so they can win a stupid competition. Like, all right, we let you keep him so you could win the league and earn your places, but we paid you the money. Now it's time to let us have him. Of course, the idea all along may have been to have bought him and left him there for a year and not bring him over. They may bring him back out on loan, send him to, I say second rate, but a level below City where things will be expected of him, but not, if he misses a shot, he's not going to be hung up and crucified. I don't know what the plan is, but the kid just seems too talented for me to believe that City aren't going to want that guy back in mid-December, saying, isn't that just a sweet December signing to have? Like, oh, hey, by the way, got a world, you know, potentially young world-class striker coming in.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you have one of your, you know, key strikers come off of injury, all of a sudden it becomes like a new signing if he wasn't there for a long period of time. I think that is going to be pretty sweet. But turning the question around back to yourself, who are you anxious to see hit the field and make their debut?
I can't decide between Gundogan or Bravo.
Oh, Bravo. That's it. That's a good one.
Because I think that Claudio Bravo, the addition of Claudio Bravo, kickstarts so many different things. And, dude, if you see how quickly some of those great distribution goalkeepers get the ball out and how they get it out and where it is, and then you see the breaks that start because of it. It's just an added dimension to the game, and you can terrorize teams with that, especially with the pace that City have going forward. All it takes is, you know, Bravo's just got to clear the lines. You get that thing to either Gundogan or De Bruyne or even Fernandinho, and they'll make one hell of a pass to a guy who's streaking completely free because, you know, the play started so quickly. I just think that the reason City haven't rocketed off the ground, like, people are, you know, they're waiting for those Bayern-style 5-6-7-1 wins on a consistent basis. People say that's not going to happen in the Premier League. Yeah, it is. There are some really bad teams in the Premier League, and people need to stop acting like the Premier League is amazing top to bottom. If there's parity, it can be tough, but there are also a lot of really people. The thing about having parity in England is that there's never really been one outstanding team. You know, so it's hard to say, oh, a manager couldn't do that in English football because the competition is so tough. Well, you know, not all English teams were playing with a complement of players like Barca, Real Madrid, and Bayern have. And Guardiola's trying to assemble that over the course of a couple of windows. And I believe if and when he does get his task completed, you know, because if City start doing really magical crap under Guardiola, it's only a matter of time before a couple of those no's turn into. Because Guardiola, let's be real, he had to sell people on a project this year, right?
Right.
Once he gets going and has proven his worth, then it's like, well, the Guardiola machine is rolling, and it's now rolling here in Manchester. Would you like to get on this train? And that's when people usually sign up. So it'll be interesting to see what he does now that he has more wealthy owners backing him for transfers, because I think it's odd. You see Guardiola making a lot more of the decisions at City than, say, some of the other managers. This is just how Guardiola likes it. It's what he does. And I think that he's been waiting for a club like Manchester City to come along and say, okay, we're going to give you complete power within reason, sort of like USC did with Pete Carroll and the Seahawks did. Like, Paul Allen owns the team, but anything that has to do with football stops at Pete Carroll's desk. You know what I mean? Like, that's just ultimately that's the way Pep wanted it, and that's what he's now got.
Yeah, and I think you raise a good point about the Pep machine being in full effect, because, you know, City has had, you know, money and talent and has underperformed. And, you know, people say Pep can't do it in the Premier League. Well, once they are performing and once he is doing it in the Premier League, those transfers that could potentially come in get very exciting in terms of the type of team he could build in year two compared to year one when he doesn't have a track record yet with the club.
Yeah, And that's going to be some, you know, really, really interesting. Like, I'm kind of curious to see, like, who City could possibly get to bring in. And I know that people are looking down the line and are hopeful for, like, a Messi type. Look, I think Messi, if he ever does come to City, it's going to be at a time when you're not going to get the best of him.
Right.
He's already on the wrong side of where you want to be in age, the injuries. A previously uninjured Messi is now starting to get injured rather frequently. Mm-hmm. The accumulation of all those kicks that he gets by just embarrassing people is finally starting to add up. It's always niggles here and there that keep him out. But Barcelona... the one thing I've been impressed by is the way that they let him come back on his own. Like, you normally, you have another club with, you know, with a guy like Messi, they're like, yeah, what are you at, 75%? Okay, come on, let's go. You know, but Barcelona have so much attacking power up front that they're like, yeah, Neymar, go ahead and stay in Brazil to hang out for an extra week. Messi, you're injured, it's cool, take off more time, you know. And I'm just curious, you know, once City start gathering up some of these players, and with a number of them coming good, like if Sané turns into the world-class winger that everyone thinks that he can be, if Raheem Sterling continues on his, you know, meteoric rise, if Gundogan can stay healthy and on the field, and De Bruyne starts to pick up from him, I mean, City just have so flipping much talent on the field that this thing could turn into a nightmare for anybody that has to face them.
Yeah, and not to mention the money as it shifts towards the Premier League, the top talent, you know, are going to be more attracted to it, and you know, what team are they going to want to join? Then Barca / you know, Bayern, the sequel is, or the second sequel now with Pep here.
Yeah. Well, before we get out of here, I just want to check in on a couple of things with you and then we will peace out. So where, Derby aside, how are you feeling about City's chances overall in the league?
Overall in the league, I am concerned about Conte at Chelsea. I think he's a very strong manager. Liverpool at the beginning of the season, I was more concerned about them. I'm starting to shake that off a little bit. We'll see what Jose does when his team gets a little bit healthy. Leicester certainly not expecting them to do again this year what they did last year. I think we should be at the top. I think we should be, you know, 1-2, and based on the evidence of what we've seen so far, I think we could put a little distance between 1-2 being in that first spot. All that said, you know, Chelsea, I don't take them lightly. I think they're going to be our key rival this year.
What is it specifically about them that worries you? Like, do you think that, I mean, is it just the way that what Conte did at the Euros? Because personally, I actually think that Max Allegri's Juventus is better. Like, truly I do. Like, I know people were not expecting that much out of Max Allegri, but I think his Juventus teams were a bit more dominant.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair comment. I think Allegri has done a good job with Juventus. I guess that could be a bit of a knock against Conte. It's just to your mention about the Euros, what he did within Italy that was seemingly not top talent, and you know, really had them outperform their talent level. And I had a buddy who works for the New York Mets, and he saw Juventus come in and what they go through and how rigid they are when they came and played in the States. How the clothing is laid out, the passing that they're doing beforehand. And I've read this about Conte before. He has like these little, you know, operas or ballets that go on the field and in practice, and then you see them play out in the game. So it's just that, you know, having him lead, you know, Chelsea if he can get them clicking, that is something that, that concerns me, just knowing what kind of a maestro he can be, you know, especially at a club that really wants to succeed. They're coming off a really, you know, challenging year. There's a huge incentive, you know, personally and professionally to do better. I think he is going to be pushing them and getting them back to where they should be. And, you know, maybe he'll get, you know, some additional help in the winter window. So that's why he concerns me, just the way he orchestrates and the discipline he will add. That said, people have said maybe they'll resist it, but they, you know, they are performing well early. So he's a bit of a concern for me.
Yeah, as well he should be. I was kind of impressed with what he did on you know, like you said, with that. I don't even know what the hell that team was that they played in the Euros. Like that team shouldn't have even made it out of a qualifying group. But, well, I guess that's not true. You look at that defense and think those three could stop just about anybody. But
satisfied enough with Bonucci over or Stones over Bonucci so far?
Yes, for one reason and in one reason only. I think Stones has got more years to give the club and probably cost a significant amount less. I think the reason that they really wanted Laporte is because he's somewhat interchangeable. You can use him as a fullback. You can use him as a center back. There are a number of different things that you can do with Laporte. And that would have been a guy that I would have looked at. But Pep will surely be aware of, is it Sully or Sule over at Hoffenheim? He'll surely be aware of him. And there are great young defenders that are coming up. If Pep sees somebody out there that he can get in for a price, I wouldn't, you know, honestly, I loved everything about Bonucci except for the price because of his age.
Yeah.
I had a hard time. If City weren't going to get any center back, if the John Stones thing was going to fall through, then yeah, I would have wanted them to circle back and just pay the fee because you need somebody. Otherwise, this system falls flat on its face. But with having seen how quickly Stones has taken to Guardiola, I think it's pretty safe to say that Roberto Martinez isn't really good at developing defenders. So it's probably fortunate that he already has pre-developed defenders at Belgium. So, all I was really going to add into that is, like, if you look at Stones in his first couple games with City, and then you look at Roberto Martinez and go, how the hell could you not, like, what were you not doing right? Yeah, clearly the kid can do it.
Yeah, kind of like put Raheem on the right, you know, maybe take him off the left side. It's amazing.
I've been saying that for I don't know how long. I said it when I was on the City Watch podcast. I said I feel like Raheem Sterling just needs to play on the right. I feel like he just operates a little bit better in space when he's on the right. It feels a bit more natural and comfortable to him. He can play the left. But I find that what he tends to do on the left is, like, dribble the ball, and then he'll almost, like, face his opponent and kind of, like, drag the ball with him while he's looking at them, waiting for him to make a move. And usually they end up just poking the ball away from him and taking it. Whereas on the right, I think he tends to get forward, run straight at defenders, be a little bit more creative, use a little bit more of the tools in his belt. I'm not sure if it's because he's not as confident in his weak foot on the left-hand side, and that's why he wasn't using him. But I think that him playing on the right-hand side has just Yeah, I mean, Guardiola will obviously impart his wisdom on Raheem Sterling. You look at what he did for Coman, for Costa, for any other number of wingers, for that matter. Yeah, I think Guardiola will completely have it covered. I'm totally fine with Stones. I think that kid's going to become the centerpiece of Manchester City's defense for quite some time to come. I'll ask you a question about Stones that I put to Gray, and then we can get out of here. Is there any temptation in your mind when you see how well Stones plays with the ball when he gets upfield? Is there any temptation in your mind where you think Pep Guardiola should buy two new center backs in the next window? Because we know City are going to be in for the next summer window when they splash big again. You know they're going to be in the market for center backs. And they'll be addressing whatever else that they need. But they only got one of the two that they wanted. Do you think that they possibly convert Stones into a center defensive midfielder?
Right. So my answer to that is and this is different with Guardiola compared to Pellegrini and compared to what we've done in the past. We've swung and missed so many times at the center back position. I'm hesitant to move somebody who's doing well there up and, you know, try to go out and make some purchases. And then what if those purchases don't work? So I guess it's a conservative answer. I worry that we move him up, we buy some center backs and they're not working out. And then, you know, do we move him back? What do we do then? It's interesting. I think if we can get the proven center backs and people we know are definitely going to perform, I think it's certainly an interesting suggestion. I don't know how easy it is, you know, based on our past history, and that may be down to Pellegrini and maybe Guardiola seems something different and makes better choices. Maybe with more Premier League dollars or TV package dollars, we can get somebody better. Does that register that concern that I'm having?
Yeah, no, the concern that you're having is registering. I was just looking at, like, okay, let's say you got in a guy like Laporte and then you packaged him. And I'm just throwing out names, okay? Like, I don't think this will happen, but let's say you took somebody like Ruggiani or Ruggiani, however you pronounce it, from Juventus, who's supposed to be the next great Italian defender, and Sule from Hoffenheim, and you put these, or Laporte, you know. Laporte and what's his bucket, you take those two and you put them there, and now all of a sudden you have a monstrously young and talented center back pairing, and you can move Stones a little bit further up the pitch. The only reason I ask that is because I see a lot of people talking about Busquets, and I'm like, you can't keep making those comparisons unless he's actually going to play center defensive mid. You know, like, Sergio is a great defender, but he's also a center mid. And John Stones seems to have a lot of that in him. And that's why I'm, I guess, pushing for maybe later on in his career for him to step up into that holding midfielder role as sort of the last line. But I agree with you. That would only need to, or should take place if/when City have the center backs behind him who are just as capable as he is.
Yeah, some of the transfer business that we did, was it Mangala and that fee in that position, you know, bringing him in and then pushing Stones up, you know, that's the risk. I'm sure we won't make those mistakes again, but it's just, it's been a concern since it's been such a rotating position for the last few seasons now.
And don't forget about the youngsters. We haven't even talked about Tosin. What are your thoughts on him?
He's pretty exciting. I like him. I like Angelino as well. I think he could be interesting. It'll be neat to see what Pep does with his squad when we're playing in some of those non-Premier League games in tournaments. Just how young will he go? And will he bring younger talent along faster than Pellegrini did? Would Kelechi be in a different place today under the tutelage of, you know, Pep Guardiola, compared to the time he spent under Pellegrini? But, you know, Tosin, I think, is a pretty interesting defender, and I think Angelino also. I think we have some depth growing in the farm team, so to speak.
And the last thing I'll say before we wrap out too is the other thing I would say is that Angus Gunn, you know, people all this talk about Joe Hart, people aren't even looking at the fact that Pep is bringing Angus Gunn up through, and I mean, he let him do the shootout against Dortmund. So, I mean, what do you want? You know what I mean? Like, the kid went up against Dortmund and stopped him three times. Like, I don't, to the point where Guardiola actually went up and asked him what his trick was. This is documented. Guardiola was so impressed with his ability to stop shots, you know, because he has seen firsthand Dortmund bury his team on penalties. Yeah. And Angus Gunn made Dortmund, and they weren't sending slackers out there either. Angus Gunn straight made Dortmund look just like any other old side with those saves. And it was remarkable. The loss of Joe Hart could equal the promotion of a guy like Angus Gunn. And if that does happen, I don't think it's a loss. I think Joe Hart was a loyal servant, served the club. Bravo's going to step in, handle business probably for a couple of years, and mentor Gunn as Gunn will probably be the third, I would imagine, if City even opt to keep three keepers, because they did have Richard Wright, but they released him. I would think that Gunn would probably be the third, because we know it's not going to be Hart now that he's at Torino. You'd have Bravo, Willie, and then Angus. And honestly, you might even suspect that Angus and Willie could swap places at some point in the season, depending on exactly how much Angus starts picking up both from Pep and from Bravo himself.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And the Dortmund shootout was impressive. He's a young Willy Caballero, a la, FA Cup or whatever title we were able to win there. I will say, though, with Dortmund, I don't know how many of those guys play for the German national team, but that Germany Italy shootout, I don't know what happened there. Because we're talking about Angus Gunn shot stopping. Is it because the Germans or German teams are having difficulty in shootouts?
No, it's like a chip off the old block. I swear to God, I think that. And then I swear, not even 2 weeks ago, I was reading an article talking about how this rash of penalty misses by Germany is really un-German. And I'm like, right. Really? It is? So I'm glad it's not just me who wonders, like, I don't know. I just am always surprised when it gets to a shootout and people are like, oh, the Germans got this. I'm like, are we watching the same team?
No. I mean, those are my thoughts exactly. So I'm glad he's stopping shots against Dortmund, and it's not a knock. It's just, considering they had such a challenge, it just makes me think about the Euros and how much of a challenge the Germans and the Italians both had in that shootout.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how some of these young lads come through. And obviously Gabriel Jesus at the Olympics. I mean, holy crap. if that kid doesn't get your blood excited for December and just the talent that City have coming through, it's just, it's never been a better time to be a fan of the proper Manchester club. But on that note, what I want to do is give you a chance to tell people where they can find you on Twitter and what you're working on, if anything. You know, it's just sort of a chance for you to take a little time for you.
Sure. You can, you know, find me at MCFC New York, and, you know, really just in engaging in the Twitter sphere with the fans and just trying to raise the profile of Manchester City football and English Premier League, you know, football, you know, here in the States, and helping to add, you know, an American, you know, voice or American typing to it, you know, occasionally some writing for some outlets and, you know, jumping onto, you know, podcasts or fan channels, you know, but mostly, you know, live tweeting the games and commenting and occasionally doing some long form stuff tweeted out at MCFC New York.
Right on, man. Well, definitely appreciate having you on. And, you know, we're going to be continuously touching bases with all of our, you know, chapters or branches. I will one day get that. All of our, you know, branch correspondence, and I think that it's great that we have so many who are just excited and willing to get in on this with us and help out, chime in, talk, because in our minds this is always for you guys. We just are the ones that get to have fun doing it. And if anybody's wondering why it's just James and I here at the end, Gray actually had to run to the airport. And we knew that, so we just kind of picked up where he left off. So don't think that we've been excluding Gray, though if you were listening for Gray, you're probably no longer listening anyway. So on that note, I will say that you can follow us on Twitter at AmericaCitizens, said city with a Y, citizens. And America, not American, because Twitter and character links. We also have an email address set up, and that's AmericanCitizensPodcast@gmail.com. No special lettering, it's citizens, the same way we spell our podcast. And we will also be back later on this week with probably another Derby preview, and we have the deal is done, it is finalized. You guys will find out exactly what it is soon enough, but we have a very, very, very exciting announcement for us to make, a transfer of sorts, if you will, of American Citizens that I am 9 billion% positive is only going to please some fans. But you guys just need to know that there is going to be nothing changing about this program. It is meant to run the way that it is run. But on that note, you can, yeah, like I said, I am actually on Twitter at FightOnTwistFC, but I am going to be creating a different account. So once I get that on there, I will put that on the next podcast. So for now, for Gray, for myself, and for James, and every City fan around the world, we say good luck, thanks for listening, and keep it tuned right here at American Citizens. We'll catch you next time.